You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.
And now, as promised, it's time for our COVID catch-up segment with Dr. John Kirk. Let's get into it. Dr. Kirk, welcome back. Good morning.
Good morning, you guys. How's it going?
Good.
Yay, we love Mondays, right?
Of course.
Universally true.
Start of the COVID catch-up world.
That's right.
Yes.
So let's dive right in on the topic of variants to the virus. This is something you're ready to talk with us about. I guess the bottom line question is, we hear there's a mutated strain of the virus. It's now in California. It's spreading probably worldwide. How worried about that should we be?
You know, so far, I don't think super worried. The real issue is that it's more contagious, but does not seem at this point to be more deadly or more likely to lead to admissions to the hospital. The problem, of course, is if it's more contagious, that makes it easier to pass to other people, and thus our numbers keep going up. And just numbers alone will put us at potential risk for additional hospitalizations and deaths.
Yeah.
So it just kind of, in a nutshell, it reiterates the importance of masking, watching our distance, and keeping our, what's our third W?
Washing
hands. Yeah.
There
mask, hands, distance.
And distance.
There we go. So we've also heard generally in the news that everybody expects the vaccines that have been developed will be equally effective against these other strains. Is that accurate?
It's probably accurate from everything that they've seen so far, and they are actively studying it, they being Moderna and Pfizer. So they're looking specifically at the reaction of this particular variant to the vaccines, and they're able to do that in the lab, you know, not necessarily having to wait simply for people to see if it will be successful. There's a couple different variants. There's been maybe as many as 13 variants that people have identified in the labs. There's only two that seem to be circulating at this particular point, the big one being this Britain one called the B117. That definitely seems to be protected by the vaccine still. There's a South African variant, 501V2. Of course, that's very important. It may have some challenges with some of the antibody drugs that have been developed, or the antibody drug that's been developed. There may be some problems there simply because it's changing the specific antigen that the antibody is tied to. And so that may be a problem for that drug, but it does not seem yet to be an issue for the vaccines at this point.
Mm-hmm. So it's easy to imagine that people may be thinking, well, I'll be glad to get this vaccine when I have the chance, because once I'm vaccinated, then I don't have to worry about wearing a mask and washing my hands all the time. I could just get back to normal. I've had the vaccine. That's not exactly the way to think about it, according to my understanding, right?
Yeah, that would be a no. So for a couple of reasons. Number one, when you get the vaccine, initially, you're not protected. It does take a period of time. The vaccination protection builds in over a few weeks. So in that initial portion of time, you still have the potential to be infectious. There's also a couple more important issues. One, at least 5% of people in the studies did not get protected. So who are they? Well, we will never know. We're not going to know which 5% until something happens to those people who have been vaccinated. So theoretically, any one of us could be infective. The other issue is it seems as though it's still very reasonable. People who have had the vaccine and successfully received it can still get the infection within their nasal cavities, be exposed to it, and then pass it on, much like a asymptomatic person would do. So I think we have to be very concerned about that piece of it, because, again, we don't feel anything. In fact, probably the majority of people who have the infection are passing it to other people don't feel anything at the time they're passing it to other people. So I think that just reiterates that masks are going to continue to be on our plate of the 2021.
Mm-hmm. Until when? What would be the moment, the event that would occur that we could start to say, don't need to wear masks anymore?
I have a feeling that we'll probably be wearing masks a lot longer than people would like to think. Some simply out of just an abundance of caution, and then others because we just don't know for sure. But we continue to talk about the herd immunity. Now, that's going to happen when we get 65 or 70% plus or minus of our people either vaccinated or infected with this particular virus. That likely, in theory, was going to come around May, June, July, in that period. And as you see from the news headlines, we're not rolling this out quite as fast as we would have liked. In fact, it's going probably about a third to a quarter of the speed that we had hoped for, with 20 million planned at the end of 2020. And I think we had something closer to 4 million that were actually vaccinated, plus or minus.
Shocker that it hasn't gone well.
Yeah, and it's been blamed on the federal response and the lack of federal response, which is not surprising. I think they've had other things to deal with, apparently.
Yeah, and again, as we've said in times past, you know, when you confront a problem you've never had before, and no one living has any experience doing this, you know, you can't really expect to have, you know, miraculous results and everything go as expected every minute. Let's talk about this anaphylaxis issue. This is kind of dramatic, the difference between the COVID vaccine and the flu vaccine in this response. Tell us the story and what it means.
So, yeah, anaphylaxis is when your body basically turns against you. It starts to put into play all of the tools that it has to fight off an infection, for example. But it's doing so where it's not appropriate, so it's not an actual infection. It may be a vaccine, as in this case, or it may be exposure to a dog hair, or it may be exposure to peanuts. You know, we hear about people passing away from peanut allergies, right? These are all anaphylaxis reactions. With the vaccine in particular, it looks like both Pfizer and Moderna's vaccine have as much as a 10 times greater anaphylaxis rate than for the flu or the flu shots. That being said, there's been, as I said, several million doses given. As of December 23rd, there were 21 cases that were reported of anaphylaxis. None of those patients died. I think one or two of them were admitted to the hospital. Certainly they were watched, and in the majority of cases, they resolved quickly. Typically, those who know allergies often carry epinephrine pens that, when distributed to the body, sort of counteract that anaphylaxis process. So there's been several uses of those among those 21 cases. Since the December 23rd study, there's been now 29 cases, as of a couple days ago, that were reported, that included some of the Moderna vaccines as well, because there was no data available for that until about December 21st. So definitely an issue to look at. Still an extremely low number. It's about 11 cases per million people. So that compares to, say, 1.3 cases per million people with a flu vaccine. I don't think it's any reason to not take the vaccine by any stretch, but I do believe that it's something that has come into our fore by saying, hey, if you have a serious reaction, historically allergic reaction to things, you probably should not be getting the vaccine at this point.
Let's touch on this this tragic case of a doctor who, in fact, I believe was an OB.
I just pulled up that article.
You know, this is a little scary for me. He is 56-year-old OBGYN.
I know.
I'm
thought of you.
56-year-old OBGYN. It wasn't me.
I checked. You know,
exactly.
There's that old thing, you know, about when you wake up in the morning, read the obituaries. If you're not there, go ahead and get out of bed, right?
So. Nice.
Yeah, then you can move on with your day. Huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, so this unfortunate person had, he had the vaccine December 18th. His response about 3 days later was to have some rashes. We don't know for sure that this was the cause, but the timing and everything is obviously very concerning, and it's being looked at very closely. It's the only death so far. That said, I did a little more deep dive this morning, and there may be another death in Portugal with a nurse who received the vaccine. Hers was a very different response. And then there was a lady admitted to the ICU, I believe another nurse in Mexico, with an anaphylactic reaction. So there's some issues there. This could be, it's being very carefully looked at, of course, by both Pfizer and Moderna. It was a Pfizer vaccine, not that that necessarily matters in itself. He was reportedly healthy prior, and as my lovely lady says, he looked a lot older than me, so I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but you know, I don't want to belittle that process, yeah. But no. He basically ultimately bled to death internally, so he had thinning of his blood, which we see with the virus itself, and we don't know for sure what his status was even of the virus at this point. There hasn't been a lot of data released, if any, other than the fact that he passed away. He had these rashes and that he had what's called thrombocytopenia, or very low platelets. And without platelets, you can't clot your blood. And so ultimately, he had a stroke. They were doing some surgery, I think, to try to remove a blood clot. And that process led to a stroke for him, and he passed.
That the low platelets part of it, in all the different stories I've read, I don't recall seeing that specifically mentioned in stories. Is that actually a marker of COVID?
You know, the blood clotting problems are issues. That said, platelets are what clots your blood. I have, as you just said, not seen specifically thrombocytopenia or low platelets as a precursor or a suggested side effect of the actual infection. So I don't think so, but you know, the jury's still out, mm-hmm. since we now have about 30 or 40 different things that yeah. have been associated with the virus.
Usually it's been the other way around, hasn't it? It's been
yeah.
causing
yeah.
clots, not causing yeah. thinning of the blood.
That's exactly right.
That's weird to me that it was so opposite, of
yeah,
course.
And there are things that people have that sort of markers in their blood that may have put him at an increased risk for this particular problem. Perhaps the virus brought it out. Perhaps something else brought it out. Hard to know. But you don't necessarily know this until you have a problem. We see it in pregnancy sometimes with women who have clotting disorders. Ultimately, when the clotting disorder continues, your body starts to use up all of the factors that help you clot, and then you can actually bleed to death because you don't have the clotting factors or the platelets or whatever it is that's needed. So it's sort of a continuum of process.
Interesting item here in your notes for today about vitamin D deficiency. Let's focus on that for a second.
Sure. So vitamin D has been raised several times over the you know, year now that we've been managing and dealing with the COVID virus. Those people who have the COVID virus infection, people who are admitted, people who die, all seem to have, not all, but have an increased risk of diminished or deficient vitamin D. I think vitamin D deficiency is a significant issue amongst all of people on average. We just tend to have very low vitamin D levels. In part, we're not getting out in the sun enough. That's where we get our natural vitamin D, through our diets and through getting out and getting conversion in our skin from sun exposure. And so there's this balance between getting skin cancer and getting good vitamin D levels, because you want to spend some time out in the sun, but you're afraid of the cancer. So when we check patients, there's a lot of patients that have low levels of vitamin D with or without COVID, but definitely an increased risk for bad COVID outcomes for those who have low vitamin D. So then the question is, well, okay, let's give everybody vitamin D and see, does that make a difference? Not clear. There's studies that suggest that it does. There's studies, as is often the case, that suggest that it does not. The bottom line probably is that there's not a lot of downside to having some vitamin D support, some supplementation. But going overboard, like most things, too much of a good thing is not a good thing. And that's true with vitamin D as well. People have higher death rates, higher cardiovascular rates, both with low levels of vitamin D and very high levels of vitamin D. That said, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 international units a day, as much as 5,000 for a short period of time every day, is a reasonable thing. It's not going to get you in trouble, those levels. They're not going to be excessive. That said, there's, again, no clear evidence that it makes a difference, but we do know that it helps with bone growth and stabilizing strong bones. So taking it's probably not a terrible thing to do.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking with Dr. John Kirk, who is a physician in the Avitus healthcare system, and all systems go at St. Helena Hospital these days.
We are on track. Everything seems to be working, and God, it looks so much cleaner now after the fires and all that, the work that they did to move it. So I'm just really, really happy to be back to work and taking care of patients.
Mm-hmm. And if you haven't tuned in before, Dr. Kirk is an OBGYN who obviously can help you have a baby if that's what you're into. You're still seeing patients on a regular basis, and how do folks get in touch?
Well, they can call us at our office here at 253-1135. They can go online to johnhkirkmd.com. We do have telehealth virtual appointments as well as in person. We'll take good care of you.
Thanks for being on again. Always tons of great information. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Take care.
You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.